It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
It's 6:07 on a Saturday morning. This is Lawn and Garden, my friends. I'm Walter Reeves of Georgia Gardener, here to help you be more successful, whatever you want to do in your landscape. I've got the answers, most of the answers anyway. If you have a question about your garden, your landscape, your flowers, indoor houseplants, bugs, creatures, whatever you got, I, generally speaking, have some research that I can quote and some experience I can draw on to give you what you need to deal with that problem. My number's easy to remember, 404-872-0750. 404-872-0750. I want to talk about a plant that was brought to my attention yesterday by my friends Bruce Holliday and Shannon Pable. Bruce was out doing landscape work, and he came upon a plant that had pretty white flowers, very fragrant flowers, very fragrant. And he, as a joke, sent a picture of it to Shannon and myself and said, what are these? What do you think this flower is? And both of us immediately knew what it was, and both of us immediately knew that it smells really good right now. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite memories is driving down in South Fayette County, down near Griffin, actually, and coming to an old abandoned pasture. And on the side of the pasture, under the fence line there, had grown up a quarter mile, easily a quarter mile of this plant. And the plant is Chinese privet. Beautiful white flowers right now. Beautiful, lovely smell. Oh, that is the best smell in the whole world. But Chinese privet has about 1 million seeds, and every one of those seeds will germinate, and you'll have little Chinese privet seedlings all over your landscape, all over your pasture, all over your flower garden, just about anywhere you have Chinese privet, you're going to have lots of little baby privets invading your landscape. When I was a kid, we commonly pulled it up. We used a tractor and a chain and a child and a father out pulling Chinese privet up. And now, even now, as adults, my brother's trying to cut it off and put Roundup on the stump to keep it from resprouting, which is, generally speaking, the best way to deal with Chinese privet. You cut it down and then immediately spray Roundup or Brush Be Gone, one or the other, onto the stump of the plant. And theoretically, it pulls the chemical down into the vascular system of the weed of the plant and keeps it from resprouting, hopefully. But there are other plants, too. I was thinking as I talked, there are other plants, too, that are beautiful, smell pretty good, and are still invasive as heck. You do not want them in your landscape. I'm thinking of wisteria. Wisteria has just about finished blooming. Beautiful blooms. Gosh, I love those flowers of wisteria. Gorgeous. And then it crawls up everything and climbs over everything. You do not want wisteria in your landscape. I know the flowers are beautiful. I know they are. Actually, have you seen wisteria recently?
Oh, for sure. It was part of my wedding. Like, my eye goes right to it every year. I love seeing it. But I talked to you years ago about trying to put it on, like, a wooden arbor. And which did you say was more invasive, the Chinese or American? I always get that confused.
Chinese is the more invasive. American is much less invasive. As a matter of fact, I just planted some a month ago now. It's called American Wisteria. And the one that blooms the best is one called Amethyst Falls. Amethyst Falls. And the flowers are about fist size. They're not big, long, hanging down things like the Chinese wisteria is. But they're prolific. And mine is blooming right now. Looks great. Chinese is the bad one. American is the good one of the wisterias. What's another one that is a terrible? Kudzu. Hey, kudzu. Pretty flowers. Beautiful little beans. Well, beans aren't that beautiful. They're nutritious, certainly. Animals love them. But kudzu, as we all know, is an invasive vine, gets all over everywhere, and it's not something you want to have in your landscape either. What is a weed? What is a flower? What's my definition? Ashley, do you know what it is?
Well, I was going to say, did you say privet?
I did say privet.
Yeah. But I mean, out in the wild, it looks great.
Yeah, but it gets everywhere. It's all over the place. My definition of a weed or a flower is if it makes you unhappy, it's a weed. If it makes you happy, it's a flower. So I suppose any of the three I just mentioned, wisteria, kudzu, and privet, they could be a flower. They smell good. The flowers are pretty. But is it a weed? If it makes me unhappy and invades my landscape and crawls over my trees and gets all over and everything I don't want to get into, then they become a weed. You decide. If it makes you happy, it's a flower. If it makes you unhappy, it's a weed. All right? Speaking of, down South Fayette County, just above Griffin, Georgia, my friend Nicole joins us on Lawn and Garden this morning. Hey, Nicole.
Mr. Reeves.
Ms. Nicole, good morning.
Good morning. Another invasive is, God almighty, vinca in the wood.
Well, yeah, sometimes. Not that bad. I say that because I have some and like it. I understand. Yeah, sometimes vinca can be a little aggressive. The big leaf vinca particularly is worse, I think, than the little leaf vinca.
It's because it's rhizome and they spread out. But when it comes, it's got to be in the shade. But when it comes to sun, it will not propagate on the sun.
Well, the same with English ivy. Same thing. English ivy loves being in the shade. And English ivy, for some people, is a pretty thing and will not do. This is the only plant I can think of that will hold a slope in the shade. It just it grows so well in the shade that it'll hold the slope from eroding, whereas out in the, you know, uncared for areas, then English ivy climbs up trees and becomes a nuisance.
This poor man from he's been calling for 2-3 weeks about his ivy on the tree.
Yeah.
Tell him to be very patient because
it will eventually die. Once you chop it off, it will eventually die. That's right.
Yeah, it's not an instant proposition. Yeah. It takes a long time. So, but anyway, I want to talk about horses.
What about them?
I saw so many horse trailer last week, not this week, because they had to be in Kentucky.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. The Kentucky Derby today.
Yes. Yes, always the first Sunday in May. And maybe somebody has the answer, but I see a lot of new trailer. The inside is well lit. I mean, just big time. There's no black spot or anything, just well lit. It's got to be a reason. Maybe they don't want the horse to fall asleep before they get there.
Maybe so.
There's a reason why.
The windows are down on the horse trailers. I don't know why that would be. I've not ever trailered a horse, so I don't know. If someone listening knows why horse trailers seem to be full of light and bright when they're being pulled down the highway. Nicole notices this because she's in her big truck, and she knows things like this. She notices them.
Yeah, but the old trailer needs to used to be green. The window was green. There's got to be another reason. Their eyes are different than us.
Good question. Yeah, their eyes certainly are different. That's true. You saw I actually mentioned that you had seen armadillos recently.
Incredible, Mr. Reed. The population is really high. They're everywhere. And we need to guide those people that UJ has got to have a research on them. What do they do? I know they are going northern, you know.
Yeah, north, further north every year. They're certainly north of Georgia now. They're up in Tennessee and Kentucky. Yeah.
What are they doing? Just walk all the way up there?
I guess so. They can swim. Certainly armadillos can swim. They can also walk on the bottoms of rivers, I'm told, that they can blow their breath out somehow, become denser than water, so they sink to the bottom of a river and walk across the river on the clay bottom of the river. Unbelievable. But they can get anywhere they want to go, it seems like, between here and Kentucky. They are certainly in Kentucky already.
So how many babies do they have in the...
Is it four? Four at a time.
Four at a time.
Yeah.
It's just, they pull them. They don't look left and right. They just cross the street.
They cross the street anyway. You see their bodies as you travel along. One of the things that's interesting to me, I guess, is that if there's anything valuable about an armadillo, it is that they sort of loosen the soil. They make their burrows. They dig holes in the ground. So maybe that's something that is good about them. Maybe it's a habitat for other animals like it is for snakes down in South Georgia where the rattlesnakes and others get into the gopher tortoise holes down there. And they loosen up the ground when they use their snouts to look for bugs and worms and grubs and stuff in the ground. So they certainly loosen the ground too. And their food for a few, very, very few other animals that eat them. But there are very few things that I can think of that an armadillo is good for.
Oh, yeah, the population is really high. Yeah. So the big bird in the sky, would they go and eat them?
I doubt it. I think they're too heavy. I think they're too heavy for a big bird, like even an eagle, maybe, to pick up an armadillo, unless it's a small one. A small one, yeah, but I'm not sure a bird would know what to do with them.
What about a wild turkey?
I don't think wild turkeys would eat an armadillo. They eat seeds and things like that. Turkeys aren't meat eaters.
I don't know about that.
All right, so is an armadillo a weed or a flower, Nicole?
Well, I know they entertain the cat.
That is a good thing to do. They entertain the cats. That's a great thing armadillos can do for you. Entertain dogs, too. Or dogs will chase them around and play with them a little bit as well.
But they're not. I mean, they're very innocent. I mean, they are, for sure. But then the population needs to be controlled with gloves and bees, especially.
Maybe something. We'll get to that someday soon. The University of Georgia, I hope, has knowledge somewhere that we don't about how to control armadillos. Nicole, I got to get out of here, but it's great talking to you this Saturday.
Enjoy your day.
Enjoy your day as well. 404-872-0750 is the number on Lawn and Garden. We'll be back right after this.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll be covering breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts through the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Now back to Walter Reeves and the lawn and garden advice you need.
We'll gather lilacs in the spring again and walk together down an English lane.
That's right, Sinatra gathering some lilacs there. Quick weather update brought to you by Finley Roofing. Chance of thunderstorms goes pretty far up this afternoon, possibly beginning around the end of the show this morning, around 9 o'clock. High of 82 today, low of 65 if it doesn't rain on you. Tomorrow, scattered showers, high of 80, low of 58. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Several great questions coming up. First in line, Gene is in Bremen, Georgia. Hey, Gene, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, how can I help?
Well, it's not my problem, but it's my sister's and my son-in-law's friend. His friend asked him, and he told him, he said, I'll get my mother-in-law to call Walter Reed. The guy said that his tomato plants, the leaves was turning white and dying.
Tomato?
Tomatoes.
No, tomato, usually when I see a tomato turn white, it's because some cold damage has happened to them, but that's not recent, I don't think.
I told him I'd never heard of that, you know, now.
No.
But he said the leaves was turning white and his plants was dying.
The only other thing I can think of, Gene, is sunscorch. If he started the seedlings indoors and took them out into the sunshine too quickly, the sun will burn them just like they burn you and me. If we go outside when the sun is real bright and have been outdoors for the wintertime, then the sun can scorch the leaves and they'll turn white then.
Well, I think he bought them from a nursery up there in Temple.
That I don't know, Gene. I do not know why they would be white otherwise.
Well, and my sister... her crepe myrtle, she had two or three little limbs, and the leaves was all turning white and all, and she cut them off. She thought it was maybe something that would spread.
I'll bet you it's powdery mildew. This is the time of year when powdery mildew starts, and it starts with a bang, mainly because this time of year there's a lot of warm nights, and powdery mildew certainly loves warm nights, and not so much... the dry days, but it's very humid days, warm nights, humid days. Powdery mildew is happy as a clam. And my neighbor Missy found some on her euonymus the other day. And the euonymus was just covered up in white powdery. And the best thing I think to do for it, Jean, for powdery mildew, is to spray the leaves with an oil. Neem oil in particular does a real good job. And the oil wets the fibers of the powdery mildew and makes them sort of slough off of the leaf. So try that rather than clipping them out next time. Try spraying with neem, N-E-E-M, neem oil. It's 628 at News Talk WSB. Back to more Lawn and Garden after news.
It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
6:36 on a Saturday morning. This is Lawn and Garden. I'm Walter Reeves, the Georgia Gardener, here to help you be more successful in your landscape. You give me the problem, we will solve it together. Coming up in the next few minutes, we got Monty and Marietta. He has a kudzu jelly thing that he wants to make, and where can he find kudzu flowers to make the jelly? We'll figure that out with him. Steve in Decatur has rose rosette, he thinks, maybe some poison ivy as well. How does he control it? Right now, first, though, David is in Tucker and joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, David, good morning.
Good morning, Walter.
Hey.
Well, I had yellow knockout roses for about 3 years now, and toward the end of the blooming season, the blooms turn white. Well, I'm just used to that, but this year, the first blossoms are white.
That's interesting. And the other interesting thing that I recently saw was Wednesday, I guess this past week, a lady sent me her red rose. She didn't say it was a knockout, I don't believe, but it had produced the most beautiful peach-colored flower in and amongst all the red blooms on her rose. And that was interesting as well. And I explained both her situation and yours too, David, by saying, roses, so do azaleas, so do camellias, and other flowers too, they send out spores, some genetic abnormality, let's put it that way, in the bud, the flower bud. It, who knows, cosmic rays, I'm not sure what it is, but something hits the genetic end of the flower bud and it sends out a color that the plant did not normally send out. So your yellow turned out a white one and her red sent out a peach one. And I told her, as I'll tell you, that if you like the color, for instance, if you like that white, maybe it has a little tinge of pink or something you like a lot about it, if the branch continues to grow vigorously, you can take cuttings and root them and see if they produce the same color, peach or white in your case, and name it and sell it for the, you know, Tucker White or something like that. It's just genetically, that's the way things happen sometimes, just something. And that's how you get variability in the world. That's how we get all these different colored roses and irises sometimes and others that they have changes that turn out to be stable and able to be propagated, and then the propagation turns into a $1 million business. So, David, soon, if you become a millionaire in Tucker, then let me know. I claim at least a couple of dollars for you.
I think if I become a millionaire in Tucker, no one will know because I won't be in Tucker anymore.
If we suddenly miss you calling in the radio show, David, then we'll know David has hit it big.
Indeed.
All right. We'll see you soon, David. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Bye-bye.
404-872-0750 gets you in to take David's place. Steve's out in Decatur and joins us. Hey, Stevie. Good morning.
Good morning, Walter.
Hey, Steve. What's up?
Well, I got the newsletter yesterday, and in it was an article on the rose rosette disease. And I had recently gotten out and pruned my knockout roses, and they had that same witch's broom configuration on the end, but they were all black. Now, this I pruned probably a week and a half ago. And so, you know, I thought maybe it was just some type of herbicide, the overspray or some type of damage. But now I'm wondering, could it be the rose rosette? And then what do I do now? You know, I don't really want to pull them all out unless I'm sure.
And that was so the reason, Dave. I mean, Steve, the reason that I put that thing about Rose Rosette, and I've hit Rose Rosette two or three times during the year in the newsletter and news articles too, but the reason I put it out was because now, as the roses are putting out new growth and the new growth is maturing a little bit, this is when I see it so readily on roses. And Knockout are not the only one that get it. It goes into all types of roses, but a lot of people have Knockout, so you notice it, or I do anyway. But yeah, the witch's broom at the ends of the branch, that sounds like Rose Rosette. Real thorny, if you look at it, it turns out there's a lot of thorns on the stems. That would be Rose Rosette symptoms. And Steve, you may not want to dig it up. You may want to prune it out, but your whole plant has the disease. It will not go away. And the only way to deal with it is to dig it up and discard it.
Okay, well, I don't. I've got four of them right in a row, close together. Now, I know which one I pruned. You could tell one's heavily pruned, so I'll pull that one out. I don't want to pull all four out until I see some evidence. So would it be a good idea just to cut those back and see what happens?
If you see evidence, do you see evidence on them or not?
No, it was just the one that it had on. It had several branches, too, but like I said, it was a black color. I haven't been able to get out and do any yard work for about 6 or 7 weeks because I had surgery. Yeah. So I don't exactly know when this happened, but when I got out last week, they were black on one plant. You can see one rose bush is heavily pruned, so that one's going to go for sure.
The black and is hard to correlate with the rose rosette because usually, as I say, rose rosette, thorny, witch's broom, gnarly looking growth on the end, sometimes really red. Red color is very much associated with rose rosette, but not black. Black is, for me, always associated with aphids and scale and things that exude honeydew and the sooty mold. The black mold gets on leaves underneath that, but I don't know what the black is. And see, just promise me, you'll keep an eye on the other roses in that grouping. If any of them have the symptoms, they start showing those symptoms, pull them out. They are infected, and they will continue to infect your roses and others in the neighborhood because we now know that the disease is spread by a mite, a tiny, and we're talking eensy-weensy mite that sprays don't get to. If you spray your rose for the mite that spreads rose rosette, the mite simply hides down in the base of the flower bud and does not be affected by insecticides. So that's why it's so hard to control. And the mites spread very readily by wind from your roses to your neighbor's roses. So that's why I hit it pretty hard. You got to control it by digging them out when they show the symptoms.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I have a question on poison ivy.
It's real quick.
It's a quick one. I've got it in one of my beds, and it's like a vine everywhere. I went out Monday and I started with the foam brush and the Roundup, and it doesn't really seem to be doing much good. And when I brushed it on, it seems to like roll off the leaves. So I was wondering, what I was planning on doing was getting out there and pruning as much as I can around the poison ivy because it's kind of like grown into everything. So I was wondering, would Roundup or Brush Be Gone, is there really one of a better option? Is there something I can put in the mix that I make to make it help stick to the leaf like this?
It ought to stick pretty well because all of the common homeowner herbicides have what's called a surfactant that's built in, that's mixed in with the product. Roundup certainly has surfactant in it. Brush Be Gone, I almost positive would have a surfactant in it as well. So generally speaking, it's not necessary to put soap or anything else in there. Farmers do because farmers use a herbicide that doesn't have any surfactant in it because different crops need different kinds of, or different weeds, I guess, need different surfactants to make the herbicide work. But the two things that control poison ivy the best are Roundup and Brush Be Gone. So if you want to try, Steve, put a couple of drops. It does not take anything more than 2 or 3 or 4 drops, maybe, per gallon of water to put the surfactant, the soap, into your mixture there. And put a little bit of surfactant in there, of dish soap, and see if that does any better. It should not roll off the leaf. But brushing it on to be safe, that is easily the easiest way to do it. I got to go, Steve. Thanks for calling. Monty in Marietta. Join us on Lawn and Garden, Monty. Good morning.
Good morning.
What you got, Monty?
I have been selected by a bunch of old veterans. We were all sitting around and discussing kudzu. It shows how exciting our lives are these days. But anyway, I've been around Marietta since 1942, and I've seen kudzu all my life, and I have never seen a single blossom. Oh. However, I've seen them on the internet. Where are they?
Underneath the leaves. That may be the reason that you don't see it. Under the leaves. And number two, Monty, they're not now. They don't bloom. Kudzu does not bloom until the fall. It blooms in July, August, I guess, when I see it most. So right now is not the time to look for them. But if you look
I'll go picking under the leaves in the fall.
October,
maybe somewhere in there.
Huh? Say again?
In October, we want to make some jelly. The jelly looks really good.
October is late.
Have you ever had any?
Yes, I have. It's very, not very fragrant, but sort of slightly fragrant. It smells a little bit like grape jelly, I guess. And the flowers themselves, sort of a blue lavender color, too. There's that colors
they
the jelly
beautiful
as well.
On the internet. It looked like an orchid almost. Yeah.
Look in October. By October, the flower, as you probably know, maybe don't know, Monty, kudzu is a legume, which means that the flowers resemble more a pea than an orchid, but I can see the orchid resemblance. And the flower turns into beans. You have little orchid beans that hang down 2 or 3 inches long, and they're brown, and they're underneath the leaves where the flowers used to be. That's what you see in October. You see the flowers first in, like I say, July, August, followed by the beans in later fall. October, November, maybe is when I see the beans on there.
All right, so I need to start looking around end of July then, right?
I think that's a good time to look, yeah.
All right, I'm going to see if I can find one. If I do, I'll give you a holler.
All right.
Enjoy your show, and I love your music. Okay.
Hey, thank you, Monty. Appreciate that.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. 404-872-0750 is the number here. And by the way, we do appreciate the music selection. Justin Ovey today is choosing our music. Jason Byers is off this morning, and Justin does a great job choosing music as well. By the way, if you want to see kudzu flowering and you live somewhere near Decatur, in North Decatur at Mason Mill Park, the new path, what do you call it, wood plank thing that goes from Mason Mill Park over to North Druid Hills, that is where I see all the flowers on kudzu. It's 647 at News Talk WSB. This is Lawn and Garden, 404-872-0750. We'll be back after this.
This is Scott Slade from Atlanta's Morning News on WSB. Our 24-hour news center delivers updates all weekend. Depend on it. We'll be here Monday morning, 4:30 till 9, for breaking news and traffic and weather every 6 minutes. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves.
When the sun is high in the afternoon sky, you can always find something to do. But from dusk till dawn, as the clock ticks on, something happens to you.
What happens? What happens? I want to know. I'm excited to understand what's going on.
In the wee,
small hours, in the wee small hours of the morning. A quick weather update brought to you by Finley Roofing. Chances of thunderstorms this afternoon are pretty high. High of 82 degrees, low of 65 tonight. Tomorrow, scattered showers, high of 80, low of 58. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes with News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Dan's out in Snellville and joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Reed. How you doing today?
Doing fine, Dan. What's up?
Enjoying the show. All week learning something new on it, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking about one quick question. When's a good time to plant tomato plants?
Now. Yeah.
Now.
After tax day is what my friend Mickey Gathaway says. So after tax day is generally a good time to plant tomatoes.
Okay, good. I'll get them going there. I like to plant 2 or 3 tomato plants.
Sure.
Kind of, you know, have some fresh tomatoes. The other thing was, when I was a teenager, I lived on a farm, right? And one of the chores I had, I had a lot of chores, but one of the worst ones I had was Dad make us get up on Saturday mornings about 6 o'clock when he went into the plumbing shop. He'd get us up, and first thing I had to do is he'd come in there, and, you know, rise and shine there to get his worms. So we'd have to go out there and start pulling weeds, and one of my chores was going in the pasture.
Yeah.
and because I was older, so I had to go in the pasture and pull up these weeds that grew like, and had thick stems on them and these little bitty skinny leaves.
Yeah, sure.
And then I'd have to just pull them out of the ground because he wanted the roots up, you know. Yeah. So we planted Bermuda. We ended up putting Bermuda hat there. But those things, when you pull them up, they had this awful smell get on your hands. And you can't,
yeah. Dan, I know exactly what you're talking about. My father was not quite as early to get up in the morning as your daddy was, but my dad had the same assignment for me, which was go out in the pasture, get that dog fennel is what you have, dog fennel. And like you say, it has thick stems. It has a nice thick root that goes into the ground.
Yeah.
And it'll make your hands smell funny. More to the point, we had milk cows. And if you let the cows get into the dog fennel, it'd make the milk taste funny, would make the Reeves kids not want to drink any milk.
That was the thing. We had Black Angus cows and horses. And he didn't want them eating it. You know, and I understand all that. But I couldn't stand pulling them because my hands would stink. Been like all day. I never got that old smell.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, Dan, I have said to others before, seeing the dog fennel that they've sent pictures of in, and I have mentioned to them that once it gets big, and they can get up to 5-6 feet tall sometimes, very feathery looking foliage on them. And I said to them, to these folks, that in a sense, it's sort of ornamental. You know, really sort of an attractive plant because of the feathery foliage and the tall, statuesque, columnar appearance that it gets. It's, as I said, it's a perennial plant, so it comes back from the roots every year. So there's some things to be said about it. I started the show this morning talking about weeds or flowers. Is the plant a good thing or a bad thing? And in this case, dog fennel, for you and me when we were kids, it's a bad thing. It was a weed. But other people might consider it an ornamental and might grow it if they don't mind having a lot of them around and don't have any cows, then they can consider it a flower, an ornamental plant. You get to choose either one, depending on what your aspect from what your experience in life is, I guess, Dan. But dog fennel, generally speaking, people call it a weed, but some people might call it a flower. It's 6:58. We'll be back to more Lawn and Garden after news.